Welcome, listeners, to another exciting episode of the TRX Procast. I'm your host, Nathan Di Rosario, and today we're diving headfirst into the dynamic world of paddle, the racket sport that's been taking the globe by storm. In this episode, we have a two-part exploration. First, we'll unravel the basics of paddle, its origin, rules, and equipment. Then we'll switch gears to discover the fascinating journey of Sandy Farrickson, founder of the Paddle School. He not only fell in love with paddle, but established his very own paddle school. But there's more. We'll also explore the critical aspects of fitness in paddle, how players can stay at the top of their game. To help us with that, we'll uncover the role of TRX Suspension Trainer and the Rip Trainer, two remarkable tools, as we all know, that complement paddle training like a glove. So whether you're a seasoned paddle pro, a beginner just finding your way, or simply curious about this exhilarating sport, this episode is packed with insights, inspiration, and essential tips for you. So let's get started. So grab your favourite beverage, settle into your comfiest chair, and get ready to embark on a journey through the courts and training grounds of paddle. It's time to unlock the secrets to success in paddle right here on the TRX Procast. Enjoy the episode.
Perfect. Yeah, I mean, thanks for having me, Nathan. Pleasure to be here. And my background, I started in tennis. I played a lot of tennis as a junior, and then I played college tennis in the States while studying. Actually, I studied degree and master's in biomechanics and human right. movement, which later in life has set me up for kind of where I've got to now. I played pro tennis for a year or two, and then coached on the WTA and ATP tours for a number of years before making a decision to move to Dubai. I moved to Dubai. I thought it was a very unglamorous life, the life of a traveling tennis player. It's not what you see in Netflix or on the big stage. And it's a lot of airport hotel courts on repeat. And after 6-7 years of doing that as a player and as a coach, I wanted to kind of had a bit more, my root, put some roots down and a bit yeah. more solidity really. And so I went to be head coach in a tennis academy in Dubai. And that's kind of where I fell into paddle, really. This is going back about 12 years now. I finished my job in Dubai in tennis, and I was going back to work with a few pro players and back again in Europe, and pretty much sold all my furniture, cancelled my visas, got rid of everything to move countries again. And right. the week before I left, someone dropped out of this paddle tournament, and I didn't really know much about it. I'd seen people playing it when I'd visited Spain, but didn't really have a clue. And I said, yeah, sure, I'll play. Why not? I'm available this week. And played in this tournament, and the final happened to be on the day of my flight. And my flight was at 1 a.m. And we finished the final at something 11. I had my suitcases next to the court, and we'd ended up winning the tournament, which is probably more of a reflection on the level of paddle at the time as opposed to my natural ability at it. And on the way to the airport, the guys at the facility, I found out at the end of the tournament, the facility was owned by His Highness Sheikh Hamdan, the Crown Prince of Dubai.
Okay. Yeah.
And they said, look, we've got these 5 paddle courts. We don't have a head of racket sports. Would that be a role that you'd be interested in taking? And at the time, I was thinking, well, my whole life has been in tennis, and you don't have tennis courts, it's only paddle. Am I going to jump into a sport that no one has heard of? And now it's quite easy to say yes, jump into paddle, because there's paddle everywhere. But at the time, I mean, there literally was no English speakers in it. I mean, part of my deal for taking that role was that they would send me to Spain to learn from the best coaches in the world, from the best players in the world. And I needed a translator to translate all of the materials that the coach educators were doing. And
yeah.
And I look back now and think, oh, I'm really glad I made the decision. But at the time, it was quite a difficult move to jump out of something that you had that much experience in and you've been doing for 20 plus years of your life to go into a completely different sport. And I'm glad, really glad I did, and never look back. I mean, I think in the last 12 years, I've played tennis once. And that was to kind of hit with my brother, who was playing pro at the time. And then I thought, oh, I'm never going to play tennis again, because it was embarrassing. Yeah. And I focused my first 4 or 5 years on getting as good as I could paddle plates, playing for the GB team, and have done for the last 8 years. And then really started making content in English for players when I felt comfortable coaching, which was probably 4 or 5 years into that journey. And initially, I made it for my small group of students, and I started seeing a big community watching in Sweden and then in other countries. And the game has just exploded over the last 5 or 6 years in English speaking countries, or countries where English as a second language is very good, Sweden or a Holland and Belgium, etc. And yeah, it's kind of snowballed from there. And part of our job with the paddle school is educating players and coaches in paddle and trying to help develop the game, really.
Just to go back on it slightly, was it the opportunity that you had with paddle in Dubai? Was you looking at it in terms of, I feel like I'm got to where I wanted to go in terms of tennis, or wanted something new, or did you see that a potential with paddle that could be something, could be the next best thing of sport? Or was it a combination of both in terms of making that decision to transition to that sport and then move to Dubai?
I think there was a level of frustration for me with tennis. When I was coaching on the tours, you're with a pro athlete, and some minute changes are what you're looking for to get a couple of percent better doing something, or rather more consistent, faster, etc. And when I moved to Dubai, it was more of an academy role, and I had adult beginners, which I hadn't really had a lot of experience with before then. And I just thought, tennis is hard to learn as an adult beginner trying to learn the tennis serve is really, really difficult. And I'd played tennis my whole life, and the pressures of being a junior trying to get ranking points and rating points, and then the circuit. And I just felt that when this opportunity with paddle came along, that adults can play and enjoy without really needing much instruction just to get them going, and they're active and they're playing a racket sport that they're having fun. You could never have that in tennis. You couldn't take four beginners onto a tennis court and the four of them play a game and have fun. And so I was immediately attracted to paddle, even just from that reason. And it was when you're coaching and your students are loving the game, it makes it much easier. It makes it much more enjoyable.
Sure. Yeah, no, brilliant. For the listeners that don't really know the sport, or maybe have heard the sport and don't really know what it is, can you just go through what paddle is and how it differs from the other racket sports that you mentioned, like tennis?
Yeah, paddle is and it's often called a cross between tennis and squash, mainly because it's played within a wall and fence structure, and the full court is 20 meters by 10, which is about a third the size of a tennis court. It's always played in doubles, and you're playing with what could be described as a beach paddle or a beach bat that you would use, and you hit something similar to a tennis ball. And the way it's played is that you're allowed one bounce in tennis, then you have to play the ball before that second bounce, but you can play it after the fence, or you can play it after the glass. And when it's played in that, and it's quite a bouncy ball, the ball stays alive a lot longer than it would do in tennis. And the rallies are often longer, and technique is less intricate than tennis. And so you can pick the racket up and or bat up and start almost immediately rallying and getting the ball in play. And really, you can be as athletic or as energetic as you want. That if you want to allow the ball to bounce back to you off the glass, it will do that to some extent. And if you want to chase the ball around the court and be really energetic, you can also do that. The scoring is the same as tennis: 15 love, 30 love, 40 love, etc. I said it's always played in doubles. It's the set is the same, first to six games, and the changing of ends and changing of sides, all of that is very similar to tennis. But it's an easier version to play than tennis, but a lot more tactical in a way, because you're playing after glass and you can hit the ball into the glass. And you're then playing, when you think about the number of ball flights, when the ball bounces, you're playing it after that first bounce, but in paddle you could be playing it after two, it's hit two glasses as well. And the more you get into the game, the more tactical and the more challenging it becomes, really.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we had the pleasure of meeting up with you a few months ago now from the TRX team, and we went through one of your coaching sessions. And like you say, it is a very simple game in terms of what you've said, but the how advanced you can get in terms of the tactics you use between your players and how you work with the glass and the floor, you can really have a quite an advanced game. And watching some of the experts that were at Bristol, it just shows the levels that you can get in terms of the expertise and how good you can play. I like the fact that it is, because tennis to me, I never really played tennis before, once or twice when I was a teenager. But the learning curve was quite high to me, and my sport was football. But then coming to paddle and playing it for the first time, it's something that you could adapt to quite quickly and at least have a half-decent game. And since then, I've been playing with my friends, and they've all felt the same. It isn't something that you can dip your toe in, to speak, I suppose, for racket sport, more than just trying to play tennis if you've never really done it before. I think that's where, and I'm going to ask you about the popularity, but that's for me why I can see a lot of people getting involved with it, just because it can be a pick up and play type of game, right?
Definitely. And I think another reason that footballers like it, or players from other sports, is that it's not too kind of risky in terms of injury. You're on a doubles court with your partner. Unless you do something really wrong, it's unlikely that you're going to get injured. And I know that's why a lot of the footballers enjoy playing it, because it also is a really kind of challenging sport for coordination and moving, and it's hand eye, which is a bit different to the football. And yeah, absolutely, it is addictive. And a lot of people follow the journey that you've had, where you'll have a taster and you'll give it a go, and then you go back to wherever you live and say, right, where's my nearest paddle court? And then you'll get with a group of friends, and then you make it a regular thing, and it just grows from there.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you think that's one of the main factors of why it's popular, or why it's getting popular now over the years that you've been coaching it and teaching it, and where it is now? Is it just a word of mouth thing, or getting people to try it, or is there other factors on why it's continuing to grow year on year?
I think it's the ease of play is a huge one, because many people are wanting to play a sport, but a lot of sports are quite technical or quite difficult. And if you're playing football, also you need quite a lot of people for that. And then you're coordinating between a large group of people. So I think that's another factor. But it is really sociable. And I haven't done any clinics, and I've done probably thousands of clinics in my time. I haven't done any clinics where people have come away and said, you know what, I didn't like that sport, I didn't enjoy that. I've never had that. It's the sport really sells itself. You will play it once and enjoy it, and then be looking to play again. And I think that's the main reason why it's growing so quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that. Definitely, as I've been playing it for a while now, since catching up with you, I definitely think that's how it's getting popular and why it's staying popular. It's not, I say, any kind of fad in any sport, really. I think it's a sport that will be taken seriously because it's just available for everyone, like we've talked about. And then in terms of like the history of paddle, the origin and how it all got started and stuff like that.
It was started in Mexico, actually, by a guy who pretty much built a paddle court in his back garden, because he had kids and he didn't want to keep collecting the balls. And so he built some walls at the end of his tennis court and essentially turned that game into essentially the olden day paddle. And this was back in like 1969. And it immediately went from Mexico to Spain and Argentina. I'm not quite sure why those two countries, but I mean, it was really fast to those two countries and established itself really quickly in Spain and Argentina. And it's interesting, actually, not much in Mexico. Only the last few years is it now grown again in Mexico. But I mean, but in Spain and Argentina, it's the second most played sport after football, considerably more than tennis, which is impressive. And actually now there's quite a few countries that are that in Sweden, for example, and Portugal, there's more paddle than tennis, and the game is growing very quickly in a lot of these countries.
Yeah, and is there professional leagues and competitions now?
Yeah, there's currently a World Paddle Tour, and it's going to be a Premier Paddle Tour, but there is a tour for the professionals, and there's also the equivalent of the Challenger circuits, or the like you have in the ATP and the tennis. There's a kind of a pro circuit that is underneath that, where you get your points and you try and make your way into those pro circuits. But until recently, when I started, those first few years, they were only in Spain. And I think there were 18 there were 18 tournaments in the year. The first few years I was playing, there were 16 of them in Spain and 2 in Argentina. And now they're spread all over the world.
Oh, brilliant. And that's really good. It's a nice segue actually into your business. As like yourself, did you see an opportunity to start paddle school based on the popularity of the sport, but then also in terms of the professionalism of it, more tournaments are coming into play? How did that all come about?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think paddle is one of those sports where it is growing as a recreational sport ahead of the professional sport. Players are taking it up, like yourself, is probably an example, and I'm not going to put you on the spot here, Nathan, but a lot of people that play it for a while probably can't name a player in the top 10, men's and women's. They watch the highlights, but they don't really follow the circuit. They play because they enjoy playing, and they enjoy having that social time with their friends. And really, the reason I started the paddle school was just to help educate people to play. It was a lot around the rules and how do you get started and what are the basic techniques? Because, and I'm sure this is something that we'll go into when we talk about fitness regimes and things like that. But yeah, one of the flip sides of the game being great for new players and everyone taking it up is that lots of people suddenly start playing 4 or 5 times a week, having never played before 3 or 4 weeks ago. And if their technique is not good or they're not doing the right off-court stuff, then they end up injured and then they stop playing. And really, our role initially was to get people into the game, to avoid that plateau. We keep giving them good information to help their game improve and to keep them on court, really. And I initially didn't really think of it as a business. It was more just let's help and support, because I always felt that was one thing from my tennis experience growing up, that there wasn't times of change, and the internet is a very different place now, but there wasn't that support growing up. And so I just wanted to make sure that paddle players had that, really.
Yeah, I suppose like education / coaching has been at the forefront of your mind in terms of helping people, and then the business has just naturally evolved into something that you could grow over the years. But it is well, not a service, and we can talk about it in terms of what kind of stuff that you do day in and day out. But that's initially how it started, right? It was just you wanted to help people get into the sport. And like you say, it just kind of grew from there.
Yeah, exactly. I came up with some topics that I thought would be useful. And once you put a few videos up and you get some momentum on social media, I mean, the questions flood in. And pretty much after those first few months, all of the videos have been directed to answering the questions from our community or trying to help them out, because that's and one of the really interesting things about it is now the UK is going through its paddle boom. But I went through this with Sweden, because most of our audience was Swedish 6 years ago and 3 years ago the same in Dubai in the UAE where I was, and now people are asking those same questions. And actually, one of the nice things about creating the content is that it lives forever on YouTube. Most of the questions that are being asked now, I've already answered multiple times over these last several years.
Sure. And is the majority of the services that you're offering at the moment, is it a lot of it online and digital, or is it a quite a bit of face-to-face? How does it work in terms of if people were coming to you for any kind of services that you offer?
Our focus is the players. We do some work with coaches and educating coaches, but predominantly it's with players. And we have our membership online where we have lots and lots of tutorials and pathways, and we do a video analysis. You can send in a video of your shot, and myself and the coaches will give you those tips back. And then we do in-person things, really almost coordinated with clubs or groups that are interested. And paddle holidays, where we go and we do paddle training for 3 or 4 days with a group. And those, for me, are some of my favorite in-person events, because often when we go to a club, you might come on a session, for example, and we're with you for 90 minutes, and that's the only session that you were able to book on. Whereas when you come on a holiday, I've got you for 4 days for all of your sessions, and there's no opportunity for you to get into other different habits in between those sessions, because a crash course release. Yeah, those are the services, or those are the events that we're mainly focusing on at the moment.
Right. And the reason for this partnership with TRX and Paddle School is you're starting to get into and your background, you've done some TRX courses in the past, but you're looking into more the fitness side of it now for paddle players and how TRX can potentially support that with the equipment. In terms of TRX itself, how did you first get to know about TRX and the education, and how can you see our equipment being involved with and really improving a paddles game for each player?
Yeah, I think my first experience with TRX was a long time ago, and I did a couple of instructor courses in Dubai while I was over there, because we had it as part of, I wanted it as part of our performance training with our groups in Dubai. And part of the reason I really like it is functional for sport, and with my background I know that that's important, but also it's something that can go in your bag and it's very easy to carry around, and it's mobile, and that's where I see it just fitting in nicely with paddle, and because paddle players generally, and this is a generalization, but it's recreational and they love the game, but generally they don't want to spend ages in the gym doing off-court functional training in a gym. But if there's a piece of equipment that they can have in their paddle bag that they can hook onto the fence or of the paddle court or tie up to one of the beams, it's, and they can do some exercises as part of their warm-up or a little bit in addition to their play, then I see that being much more accessible for them rather than something where you require a long-term membership or a lot of equipment and things like that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think as we talked off before we started recording, one of our trainers, Matt Gleed, has done some videos with you in terms of showing some really basic movements to advanced movements on the Rip Trainer and the TRX suspension trainer on basically how to just basically keep fit and be strong for the game of paddles. Do you see that now as I suppose, lack of information from a fitness point of view currently with paddle, or is it something that's there anyway, but you just want to try and get that out to as many people as possible?
I think it's twofold. So my primary aim is to get people to do a good warm up before they play. For me, that's one area where they will play better and they will avoid injury. If they can spend 10 or 15 minutes before they go on and they do some, and I'm not talking about just kind of jogging up and down the court, if they can do some good functional movements before they go on, I think that's going to be really beneficial. And then for those that are competing and they want to improve their performance, what happens in paddle is you reach a point where your understanding of the tactics is good, you've had lessons and your technique is then good, and the game becomes all physical after that, all physical and mental, and physical and mental are tied together. There's a big element, and that's why it was great to do those videos and that course with Matt, because we really went through some great exercises for beginners and also more advanced players on what kind of off-court training they can do to improve their performance on the court. And yeah, I really do think it is a key piece of kit for any player that really does want to develop like that.
Yeah, definitely. And the videos are coming out soon, right? They'll be available on your website in a couple of weeks by the time this comes out, or you've mentioned, right?
Yeah, exactly. And we take our time with the editing because we kind of want that quality. But yeah, everything's been filmed, everything has been edited. We're now kind of preparing it, and our members will have access to it once it goes on our courses. And yeah, there'll be some really nice videos with the suspension trainer and with the Rip Trainer on how you can have little programs or even if you're just looking for paddle specific exercises, it'll be a great place to go.
Yeah, brilliant. Everyone that's listening, make sure you check out the Paddle School website, and Sandy will give some more details at the end. But for those that are after just quick tips now from having a listen to this and they're already playing paddle and want to improve their game or get fitter for it or stronger for it, is there any kind of go-to exercises, whether it's with our equipment or not, that you would probably recommend people starting if it's part of a warm-up or part of a general fitness routine if they're in between playing paddle?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are areas of your body that you've got to protect in a way, and your shoulder is one. You play a lot overhead mountain paddle and some shoulder strengthening exercises. And actually, we are bringing out a physio course as well, which we're actually also doing with the TRX, the recovery package. Sorry, yeah. with the bands and the roller and things like that. But for me, if you can warm up your glutes and lower body and your shoulders before you go on, I think it's really key. And actually, we do with Matt a 3-minute warm-up, which actually we do without equipment in this case because we wanted everyone to be able to do it. But it was just a really simple 3 minutes. And then what I would probably do is then do a few of the slightly more dynamic movements that you can get with the rip at the end of that before you step on court.
Yeah, great. And then what about in terms of, let's talk about cardio. It can be quite an intense sport, but do you need a certain level of fitness? Can anyone just pick up and play? And if from a cardiovascular point of view, is it just a case of making sure you're doing some cardio activity generally in a week, whatever it is, or is there specific things that you would recommend from that side?
Yeah, I think it's a spectrum really. And what's quite nice is that you could be any fitness to play. I've seen any fitness to get started. And then the pro athletes will be as fit as your pro tennis athletes.
Right.
I mean, their points are 60, 70 shots long, and they go on for minutes, and you get less rest time between points. And so their cardio and their endurance capabilities are fantastic. And you've really got everything in between. And I was saying earlier, you can almost push yourself as much as you want to. And the paddle is a good way to build that cardio, because you're in a way, and this is what I find, I'm sure everyone's the same, it's easier to do your fitness when you're chasing a ball or you're playing a sport.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it's much more fun than being on a static bike or a treadmill for many hours at many weeks. Yeah, I think that's a really good answer. And in terms of then, based on endurance and cardiovascular, what is the average length of a game? I know that can't be exact in terms of the style of play and the quality of play, but paddle, could it go the lengths of some tennis games that you see on TV, or are they shorter really in terms of the scoring system and how quickly you can play?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they can be longer. I mean, they made a rule change about a couple of years ago to go from long juices to golden point.
Right.
Because I remember before I was organizing one of the pro tournaments in Dubai, and our ladies semi-final went on for about 4 hours and 15 minutes.
Wow.
And it was just, I mean, it was great paddle the whole way through, but because there were no short juices, it just went on. And nowadays, most of them will be similar to tennis. They'll last a couple of hours. They're all best of three sets. And yeah, I would say it would be roughly the same or similar to tennis probably.
Yeah, okay. So you would need a certain level, especially at professional or more advanced levels where the games could be quite tight. So you do need a certain level of endurance or strength, hopefully all being well using our equipment. But yeah, also on the flip side, we've discussed it can just be a pick up and play, and you can try it at any level. And actually, the enjoyment of it is probably the journey as you get better from a skill point of view, but also being able to last longer and be more fit to play the game of paddle overall, right?
Yeah, and I think I haven't seen how you play with your group of friends, but what often happens is you'll start playing a match, and it's not like tennis where you'll change every two or three games. You'll play the full set without changing, probably without a drink, and because there's just less time between points. You pick the ball up, you start the next point, then you give the balls over, and then you've actually, when you have your first drink, it's probably at the end of that first set, and you're already 30 to 35 minutes into playing, and it's quite interesting that. I mean, that's one of the changes that when you go up that level, you almost need those breaks in between. It becomes more physical, but most recreational players will just play a full hour, 2 hours, and we used to have some of our bookings where they'd be on for 4 hours. Just recreational players just
really
keep going and going and going. They just it's very addictive.
I totally agree with on both points that you've said in terms of the hydration. Like before I knew it was half an hour deep and I haven't even had a drink, because there's no really time to stop, which is good in that sense, because it's addictive. But it is that, it's like that one more go scenario. It isn't, because it's you lose points. But from my point of view, it was like, oh, these are easy mistakes. We won't do that again. And let's go again. And we can be better next time. It didn't feel like we were getting an absolute beating. It was just, these points that we were just missing. Is that quite addictiveness to try and get one more point and have one more go and be fine? I can imagine why people will stay there for hours and hours.
And there's kind of that camaraderie, isn't it, of being close to your opponents, in that there's that all that banter that happens between points and change of ends, and yeah. Because it's your 10 by 10 meters with you and your partner, and they're the same on their side, you can have that banter with all four players on the court. And you see matches where people play for an hour without even realizing their court booking is up, but they've been really getting into it and egging each other on, and it's great to see.
Oh yeah, brilliant. And probably the next question is more of a selfish one for me, but I'm sure people listening will take. Is there any kind of tips that you would recommend? Say you've been playing general paddle for a few weeks or a few months. Is there any kind of tips that you would say, right, look at improving this or this to really kind of take your game up even just the next level? When it comes to it, people think, oh, what the hell, have you gotten this good? Is there any tips that you would kind of give people?
You have to send me a video of you playing, Nathan, for the, sure. Yeah, for the right. Specific ones.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, generally, when people come to the game, my first kind of tip to them is allow the ball into the glass, get used to the glass, and don't kind of shy away for it or avoid it, because a lot of people come from tennis, or even if they haven't come from tennis, they come into the court and they find that rebound a little bit difficult to get used to. And what happens is they avoid it and they block the ball before it hits the glass. And then therefore they never end up practicing it. Usually my first tip is use the glass as much as you can, and also learn to play with control instead of thinking I'm just going to melt it and just smack the ball past my opponent. It's try and learn control of the game and moving the ball around and moving your opponent around and understand the strategy of it, rather than just going and trying to blast your opponents off the court.
Yeah, that's really good advice. And again, very similar. As I played tennis once or twice when I was a teenager, but it was just that natural thing that you want to try and hit it before it hits the glass, just because, yeah, that took a bit of getting used to. In terms of paddle itself, where do you see it kind of going in 3 to 5 years? Do you think it's going to continue that trajectory of the popularity year on year, or do you see it plateauing, or do you see it going in other directions? What's your opinion on it?
Yeah, I think it's going to just grow and grow. If we use our analytics and our viewership as a guideline, if we think that across our social media now, let's say per month we get something 8 or 9 million views, and of that, less than 5% of them are all English speaking combined. US, UK, South Africa, Australia, all of those combined are less than 5%. All of these other countries have, the game has exploded, and we haven't gone properly to those countries yet.
Okay.
The UK, as an example, we've got between 250 and 300 courts, and we've got a population of 70 odd million.
Yeah.
And Sweden have got 10 million or 10 and a half million population and 4,000 courts. You see, the potential for growth in the UK, the US, South Africa, Australia, and then not even Asia, it's only just started as well in China,
right?
You know, and India as well. And you're talking about countries with huge populations that are the wheels are only just starting to turn in paddle. And I can really see it booming in these next 5 years.
Yeah. And we're a US company, and we have quite a lot of listeners from the US that listen to the podcast, which is great. I don't know it personally. Pickleball, is that correct? Is that very similar? And what are the differences? Because it seems like two sports have come out from Oi that seem very similar in a lot of ways. Is it two different sports, or is it a combination of both, really?
No, I mean, they're two completely different sports. And I think that they've gained popularity for similar reasons, though. They're easy to play. Technically, they're quite easy to play. Pickleball is the same. It's easy to pick up. It's sociable. You're on a smaller court. You're in close quarters with your partner and your opponent. So it is sociable. The rallies are longer. It's unlike tennis, where you're picking the ball up all the time. Pickleball, you keep that rally going. And I think the advantage for pickleball over paddle is that the setup costs for court are minimal. You need the net and your paddles and that plastic wiffle ball. And so setup costs, it's really easy to just throw up a pickleball court. For paddle, the court is a lot more difficult to build and install, and you need to ship it and get it there. But to its advantage, it is, I would say, deeper tactically. Once you get into paddle, there's much strategy and depth of tactic in paddle that you don't get in pickleball. And I know there'll be a lot of pickleball say, well, it is very tactical, and it is tactical. I'm not saying it's not, but the idea that you've got the glass walls and the corners and the fence and all of the things in paddle make that just adds another dimension. But essentially, yeah, both sports have grown because they're easy to play, they're sociable, and they build good communities.
Yeah, perfect. And then in terms of paddle school itself, what are your kind of aims and goals over the next like 12 months, 2 years? Where do you want to take your business to the next level? Or is it you want to maintain what you're doing but just get more people involved? What are the futures holding for paddle school?
Yes, our mission has always been really for anyone that picks up a paddle racket, that we're there to support them and to help educate them, learn the game and improve their paddle. And that will always be our aim, I think. And that focus will be on digital and providing online courses, a bit like the TRX, the physio, and all of the technical and tactical courses that we already have online. But it's also to then be involved and, you know, do in-person days and build community around the sport. Our plan is to hopefully grow with that English speaking audience and be able to provide that hybrid of training, which is, you know, the online digital but also really high quality in-person clinics and events as well.
Great. And in terms of people, if they've never played it and they want to get involved, is there a general website, aside from yours, where people can go and find their local courts? Or is it just a case of searching for paddle on Google in a local area and away you go?
Yeah, it would that would be what I'd recommend, is search for paddle in your area. And most paddle courts, and unless you're in Spain and the game is already well established, in almost every other country, clubs are often doing introduction lessons or somewhere where they can go down and try the game, go with a few friends, have a go, and then you will then discover your group of people or the community that you want to join there, and you'll get into your routine of trying to start competing and playing with your friends and all that type of thing. And my only kind of advice for that is, if it is at all possible for you, and it's not always possible, but if you can get instruction at the beginning of your paddle journey, it is going to be much easier for you and much easier for your coach to make those technical changes and help you with your game at the beginning. Most of the people that we have that come to us for coaching have played for a couple of years. They've got to a level where they've plateaued and they've got frustrated, and then they come for coaching. And then as a coach, I'm trying to break the bad habits that they've picked up over those couple of years and form new habits, but it's much more difficult, both for player and coach. My advice would be, if you can, try and get some lessons and some instruction early on.
Yeah, great. Really good recommendation, Sonny. Thank you. And then in terms of, as we're wrapping up now, again, thank you very much for your time. It's been really insightful conversation, which I'm sure all our listeners will agree with that. Where can people find more information about yourself and Paddle School itself?
Yes, we are on every social media platform. I think we do our best to cover our bases, and it's at the paddle school, and you'll find us there. I'm probably most active either on Instagram or LinkedIn, Sandy Farkson on LinkedIn, and please do send us a message if you're interested in paddle or you want some advice or we can help in any way. Then we're always very open to doing that.
Brilliant, Sandy. And I know you mentioned YouTube before, and people won't be able to see this video, but behind you, is there like some sort of YouTube milestone in the background? Right. Is that for Paddle School?
That's for Paddle School. Yeah, that was our 100,000 subscriber mark. Brilliant. That was blood, sweat and tears to get there, but we got there in the end. But yeah, YouTube is, I mean, that's probably the place where we have our most of our kind of information. And if you want to dive deeper, then we've got the website, thepaddleschool.com.
All right, and Sandy. So like I say, thanks very much for your time. It's been really insightful. And I'm sure I'll continue to play paddle after spending some time with you. And I would fully recommend it, trying it. And I know there's some TRX trainers that have knew this podcast was coming up and said how much they love paddle and have got into it in the UK and in the Middle East, like you've mentioned. We would fully recommend you having a try. Make sure you get in touch with Sandy. He's always available to answer any questions that you guys have. Check out the Instagram and the YouTube channel because there's a lot of quality content. Sandy, thanks again for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Cheers. And that's a wrap for this episode of the TRX Procast. A big thank you to our special guest, Sandy Farrickson, founder of the Paddle School, for sharing his incredible journey in paddle and insights into the world of fitness for paddle players. We hope you found this episode both informative and inspiring. If you enjoyed this episode and want to stay updated on future episodes, be sure to hit that subscribe button and leave us a review. Your feedback is invaluable in helping us bring you more of the content that you love. Don't forget to check out the show notes for additional resources and links mentioned in today's episode. As always, stay active, stay fit, and stay tuned for more exciting content on the TRX Procast. Until next time, this is Nathan DiRosario, signing off.